Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Kathy Burke, who's coming today with Pippa, her friend. Kathy loves sea bass. There's loads of things she can't actually eat. So we really thought about the menu. She's having crispy barbecued sea bass. We've made a summer herb cream. I've been juicing herbs like parsley and chives and oregano and bay, actually, is the other thing. And they're really, really beautiful. We've reduced some cream. We're making leeks and spinach pressed, and they're going to be dressed with roast garlic and roasted lemon. And we've got a potato rösti on. So I'm just getting the barbecue ready so I can get the sea bass on and crisped up, and then when she gets here I will just flash it and finish it.
And the drink that I'm making today is like fruit vegetable spice juice. So the spice is ginger, press the ginger in the juicer, quite a bit of it, didn't we?
Yeah,
like a bit of spice there.
I eat juice sous chef today.
My juice sous chef, my juice soup.
The weird thing about having Kathy over for lunch is that it doesn't feel weird. But actually, when Mum went on her podcast the other day and loved it so much, it was the first time we met.
We've known who each other is. And then the other day I did her podcast and we had the most brilliant time. It was literally the longest conversation we'd ever had together. Mm, yeah. It did feel like we already knew each other properly. And we are tribally the
connected.
Same.
Yes, tribally connected. I just think she's brilliant and smart, and what I've loved is watching her make this somewhat unexpected segue into being a broadcaster, and I do really want to talk to her about that today if she sees herself like that, because she's one of the best and it's not her chosen profession.
Just, she's one of those people, I just really admire her a lot. So happy to have you in our house.
Amazing already.
Welcome to our house. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you very much.
Who have you brought with you?
So, this is my very good friend, Pippa.
Pippa Brown.
We met working on a job.
Kathy was directing it.
Yeah, but I don't really like talking about that.
No, but
job.
I'll tell you what, the first thing you ever said, though, was when you came to the office.
Yeah.
We were, like, saying hello, and it was, you know, I was really low down in production, and trying to, like, make sure Kathy was okay, and it was the first, like, big thing I'd done as well. And I was, like, said to her, where do you want to be? And she goes, oh, I don't know, I guess Cornwall, because I love the sea, but not for a few years. And I was like, oh, I meant, where do you want to sit? Like, where do you want to be?
Not retirement.
But then we laughed.
Oh, that's so nice. And were you quite relieved? Were you nervous
to meet Kathy?
Was it no.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, of course I was nervous to meet Kathy, because I grew up watching Kathy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was nervous. But also, like, she's immediately disarmingly lovely.
Yeah.
And
this
funny.
Is true. Do you two argue?
Do we argue?
Do you ever get on each other's nerves?
Oh, we've definitely had a row, but we don't sort of... We're not sort of binary.
No. Have you ever not spoken?
Yeah.
Like, for a prolonged time?
We did. The longest we ever did was a month.
She wasn't talking to me.
No, you weren't. I'm talking about another time.
Oh, God,
then.
It's going to kick off.
Can you feel it? Feel the tension rising.
Isn't the weather nice?
I'm from a single parent family. I'm my mother, Andy Oliver's only child, and her daughter. So it's like, it was gonna get spicy with us being, you know, only 20 years older than me. Growing up in that way, you're such a team that you drive each other completely crazy. And I always wondered what it would be like with more people in the house, siblings, a dad. maybe it would ease it a bit because it's just like two people. But now that I'm older, it's just this glorious thing that I know has come from the particular way that we brought each other up.
Yeah.
Cathy, you don't have siblings.
Oh, I do.
Oh,
yeah.
You do have
I've got two older brothers.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. Two big brothers.
What was your relationship like with them when you grew up?
Well, it was very sort of different to normal people's because we lost our mum. Our mum died. I was about two, so I don't really remember her. But my brothers were sort of 10 and 8, so it was sort of a massive blow to them. Mm. But it also meant that they had to grow up because this is the 60s. Okay. So there was no sort of counselling or any sort of help or anything like that.
Really?
And the boys were just expected to get on with it. And
was your dad there?
Dad was there sort of in and out. Do you know what I mean? Dad had, he had quite a few problems and stuff, so he was around, but not all the time. So I always sort of felt like, you know, they were like my mum and dad.
Right.
As well, you know.
Your brothers.
Yeah.
Right.
And John always, who's the eldest, did the majority of the cooking.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
What did he, what kind of stuff?
Well, it was all very sort of, we're Irish heritage. So it was very sort of what Dad wanted.
Potatoes.
Shoes. Potatoes. Just potatoes. Meat. Lots of meat. Sort of boiled bacon and cabbage and potatoes. Lots of stews.
This is my dream menu, Mum, isn't it? This is so my kind of food.
Lots
mince.
Of
mince, yeah.
Because it was cheap.
Did you eat, like, family tables and stuff? Or did he just cook and you grabbed it as people were passing through? What was it?
Oh, because no, we did all sort of sit at the same time.
So how old was John then? He was, like...
So he was, like, 10, 11
wow.
when he was cooking. Started to, it's amazing. You know, when I look back, it's just, like, sort of astonishing mm. that they just got on with it.
Because they had to.
Yeah. And Barry would do things like the laundrette and, you know, stuff like that.
Goodness.
But then once I was big enough, then I was doing my chores as well.
How old was big enough?
Oh, sort of 6, 7.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, right, yeah. So I'd be, yeah, doing the laundry and stuff. But I also got fostered for a bit, but on a sort of weird Monday to Friday basis.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean? And then, yeah.
I didn't know
then,
they could do that.
And then, well, this was the 60s.
Secret I think
it was just, yeah, it was just a bit different then.
And then did you go back to your
yeah,
family at the weekend?
Because I was only fostered by a lady that lived in the flats
so
across
that,
the road.
I guess that was the 60s version of kind of community support. Yeah.
Yes, because it was very much about the church. Right. So we're at the Catholic church, you know, so that was sort of who was helping and social workers and
stuff.
And I
guess that just took the pressure off of a few days a week so that everybody could get catch their breath.
I think so. I mean, I was a nutcase, so I just think they were just glad of a bit of peace and quiet.
Even that little, were you quite chatty?
I was very chatty. I was forever being told, stop being so bold.
Really?
Because I would chat and ask questions and we did a little reunion, a little gang of us, women, that were all at the same primary school together. There's only 6 or 7 of us, you know. But when we first did a reunion, I think we were in our 30s and we were all talking about when we were kids and all that. And then one of them, Bernice, turned around and said, Kathy, all you're remembering is the food. Because I just remembered what I ate in everyone's houses.
Wow.
Do you know what I mean?
I love that. But, you know, sometimes those meals are the way you latch on to a memory.
Yeah, because it's connection, isn't it?
Mm.
And that must have been when you felt happy and, like, safe and connected.
I think I was really sort of food obsessed. I mean, it's so weird being an adult and being quite a fussy eater. Because when I was a kid, I think I would have eaten anything. I would have tried anything. And I would lie, like, terrible lies. And, like, my brother John, there was one... Once John started to go to secondary school... Well, once the two of them were at secondary school and I was still at the primary school...
Yeah.
Before he would go to school, he would take me down the road to Mrs. Riley, whose daughter Mary was still at the primary school. So Mary would take me to school, but John would get me up, give me my breakfast, and then take me over down the road, and then he'd get on the bus. And then one day, he took me there, and Mrs. Riley scolded him and said, John, I know you've got a lot on, but you must, it's very, very cold, and you must put some breakfast inside that child before you leave the house. And the way John looked at me... because he was giving me breakfast. But then I'd arrive at the Rileys, and once he was gone, she'd go, have you had your breakfast? I'd go, no. So I was forever, I mean, right up to, I remember when I was 16 and I was at Further Education College and I became great mates with my mate Mickey, Michael Winslow. He was from a single parent, his mum, Gloria, and they lived in down Old Street. So, you know, it got to a point where I was sort of rocking up at Michael's after college.
To get a little snack.
Yeah, really. But I never forget one day just when I turned up and Gloria just went, I haven't got enough food for you.
No more.
She was like, oh, my God.
I can't, you know, because you're a single parent. And she's trying to feed this growing boy. And he's become mates for this. Right. You know, it's a skinhead and just sort of stood there.
Skinhead.
Oh, what are you having?
A really hungry skinhead.
Do you know what I mean?
Brilliant.
But, yeah, I used to bunk off school quite a lot. This was secondary school.
Yeah.
And I just used to get on the bus. And I would just, you know, when you're a kid, though, like, even, like, a young teenager, I would just talk to other kids that I didn't know. I'd go, all right, you know. Be, you know, you go to the shops. Oh, yeah. Have you got money? They'd be like, yeah. And I'd go, oh, I'd love some crisps. Honestly. I remember even in the school holidays, I would go, because we lived in these flats, you know, sort of old mansion block.
Yeah, yeah.
And so there was loads of families in there, people that I'd never met, you know, and you'd never even seen. And I just, you know, the summer holidays, and I'd be feeling hungry, and I think, oh, I've never been in that pub.
Just, oh, there it is.
Yeah, I would just go in and just knock on someone's door.
Literally, and go, what kind of food?
And go, are you having your dinner, you know? I mean, isn't it outrageous? I don't think my brothers ever did anything like that. Would never cross their minds.
And they were like, where is she? Probably at somebody's house. Where did you grow up, Pippa?
Yeah, Pippa, where are you from? London?
No, so my dad was in the army. So we were sort of in Germany. I was born in Belgium, then we were in Germany, so I was like 17. So we lived in Berlin for sort of 2 years before and 2 years after the wall came down. Which was in like amazing.
Very intense time to be there.
Yeah, but it was really exciting. Like, I remember my mum, I missed ballet practice to go and drive down to stand on the wall.
As it was coming down?
Well, the day they announced it was coming down.
Oh, amazing.
So we drove down, and then she was like pulled up onto the wall by these people, and then she put her hand down to pull me up. And I just remember being pushed up by these people, and then I wet myself.
That's excellent. That's an excellent story. Right.
Really exciting and terrifying. Yeah. So you just, you know, that's what happens. Your body just goes...
And then when did you move to London?
We moved to London when I think I was 17, to Mill Hill.
That's the kind of area I always wanted to grow up in, though. Like, North London, like, I don't know, like, structure, families. I grew up in, like, Portobello in the 80s. It was just chaos. Mill Hill felt like the opposite of chaos to me, places like that. I was like, can we just go live where things are really calm?
Peter once bought me a little stainless steel saucepan for Christmas because that's what she wanted our house to look like.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And she would try to get me, like, a cardi. I was like, I'm not wearing that.
I wanted it to be white with, like, Venetian blinds. My mum was like, why do you want us to live in a shit office?
What is this about? I was like... She'd show me pictures and I'd go, that's not a house, it's an office. Like, that's where people work.
I want to live like this.
Where were you getting those ideas from?
Weird blind catalogues. And they would be like, it would look like this in your office.
Like rubber plants, like that big
and
one.
That you'd plant, have loved I would that, love that. You? I was like, we should have a green plant. But also, I was like, we should be white and I should be blonde. You know, it was about a lot of other things.
Fitting into a picture, do you know what I mean? There was a whole period of time where I wasn't allowed to go to the school gate.
Yeah, sorry, that's because you were wearing electric blue furs.
It wasn't furs.
And
it
singing,
was
and singing,
A-coat.
And singing, peace in the valley, peace in the city, peace in the soul.
I was really
intrigued. Has she lost her
and
mind?
And I had, like, a leopard skin fur hat as well.
After that, I was like, banned.
But did all your friends not want to hang out with
her? Yes, and it's loved me. And then she was like, whatever, you talk to her.
And that's how it's always been.
Yeah, yeah. I had to wait on the corner.
down the road. I used to wait on the corner down the road. I went into the Tabernacle once to pick her up from a birthday party and she ran across going, no! I was like, oh, my God, I didn't know I wasn't allowed in here either. I was like, do you know what I mean?
And look how all that fabulousness has paid off. But this is our particular, you know, this is our very nuanced, niche version of family. I was wondering what family means to you guys, because we all seem to have extremely different...
So have you got siblings, Pippa?
I've got a sister who's 2 years older. Because you're at school, we didn't really grow up a lot together.
Right.
And then holidays are like, you just fuck off with your friends.
Yeah. You used to be able to do that, didn't you?
Yeah.
In school holidays, yeah. Just literally go off for the day. You'd
yeah.
see
yeah.
parents
it
in
was
the
amazing.
Morning.
Yeah.
And you'd be, they'd be like, all right,
cycle
off you go.
Off.
And you're off on your bike yeah, or your yeah. scooter.
Yeah.
We'd like cycle off to a field and then cycle around the field and cycle back.
Oh, God, it sounds like a
oh,
riot.
So yeah. bored.
But also, like, get on a bus and go to, like, a gig.
Oh, yeah.
Like when you were a bit older.
Yes. Only if I lied. I mean, I wasn't allowed to do it. I ran away to see The Clash once.
Did
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
Where did you see them?
They were playing in Bath, and I was in Suffolk,
you went
which
from
is
Suffolk?
The other end of the country.
What did you tell your parents?
I told them I was going to school. And then me and my mate went to the train station, got on the train, and then we hitchhiked.
From Cambridge?
From kids used to hitchhike all the time. Yeah. I mean, I literally can't believe I'm still alive, honestly. Hitchhiked from Cambridge to Bath. And then I called my mum and from a phone booth. I'm beep, beep, beep. Hi, mum. I said, hello. She said, where are you? And I said, I'm in Bath. She said, you're in the bath? I said, no, I'm in Bath. And she was like, what?
Yeah, why were you suddenly confessing?
Because I was in fucking Bath. And she knew at some point I was not going to come home from school. Also, I figured I was in Bath. She couldn't really
so
come
So your
in.
Plan was get there, then tell.
Get there, then tell them.
Was she furious?
Absolutely incandescent. Mm. And then I put
How
the phone
old
down.
You?
I was like 15.
15
oh, that's all right.
And then, I mean, what a little shitbag, honestly. And then Louise called her parents, who were the strictest people in the world, and her dad was like deputy chief of police, which we hadn't taken into consideration. And he was like, right, I'm putting an APB out on you.
No, you got picked up.
No, because we hid. We were like, shit, you know, the feds.
I've not heard the details
we were, like,
of this
hiding,
story.
And we got to see The Clash, and we had a great time. We got backstage, we were hanging out, and we were like, this is it, we've reached. And then we went, oh, yeah, this is really funny, because her dad's deputy chief of police, and we're 15, and they all went, what? Reeked out.
Amazing. Amazing.
Get them out of here
oh
now. Because we were like underage, terrifying
Didn't
police.
Did you meet The Clash?
Yeah, I wrote a little short about it. Sky, a few years ago, they did this series called Little Crackers.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
So I wrote one called, and it was for Christmas, meant to be Christmas stories. I wrote one called Better Than Christmas. And it was about when I was 15, and bumped into The Clash at King's Cross Station.
Oh,
and I had my New Musical Express with me that had, the front cover was the death of Ian Curtis from Joy
oh,
Division.
Oh, goodness.
And so they all signed it for me, but I had cut Clash into my arm.
Oh, my God.
And I was going to get it, you know, Indian inked.
Yes.
And God love him, Joe Strummer saw it, because it was the summer, so I was in my school uniform, but short-sleeved. I think I pointed it out to him, actually. I would have just...
I would have shown it.
Look, I've done this, and I'm waiting for the Indian ink. And God love him, he went, don't you dare.
Oh.
He went, don't you dare, what are you doing? Cutting yourself,
Please
destroying
don't cut
yourself.
Into your body, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I never did it. And, oh. it took a while to heal. And then what was interesting, like literally 5 years later, well, a bit longer than that, I worked with him because I did some Alex Cox films and then he was in Straight to Hell.
Oh, of course he was, yeah.
And so then he became like a pal.
He was a lovely man.
He was a really sweet guy,
He was a sweet
actually.
Man.
I was going to say, I love that both of your Clash stories end with, and then we became great friends.
Yeah.
Mum, my best friend is Lauren, who's dad to Mick Jones. So like, it's like the Clash are just family now, so.
Yeah,
good work, guys.
Like, yeah. Actually, they were the first, you know that thing, so all the people, like, you know, when you were a teenager, and I think especially like with punk, it was like things were not as far away from each, like, you know, like punk stars were literally like the people on the corner. Do you know what I mean? They weren't so far out of reach, which
That's
I think
it.
Was possibly part of the appeal of punk, because
yeah.
it felt like it could be you and it was you.
Yeah.
And it felt like it was an expression of us. We
That's
talked about
it.
This, didn't we?
Yeah, yeah.
And
wasn't Duran Duran.
That's no, that was different. A different kind of pop star.
Also felt like you could meet them at King's Cross.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then if you stood in the pub long enough, one of them would come through. Yes. You know what I mean?
No. Yeah.
And I think, you know, when I came down to London, I quite quickly met lots of the people that I, you know, had oh my on my God. Walls at home. You know, Paul. I had a massive poster of Paul Simon on my wall. Like, the first time I ever met Paul, I just... thought I was going to pass out.
Well, he is one of the sexiest men
ever. I mean, he was ridiculous. Yeah. He was ridiculously
when
beautiful.
I was at school, I was completely in love with Damon Albarn from Blur.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I used to... Everyone else was, like, in Spice Girls had just come, you know... Like, yeah. So everyone was dressing like Spice Girls in buffalo shoes and all that. And I dressed like Damon. And I bought, like, his trainers, bought, like, the Kappa top, the jeans. Then I found out Justine Fisherman's girlfriend, where she got her hair cut. So I went to, it was Andrew Joss on the bottom of Charlotte Street, and my mum took me there, and I got her hair cut.
That haircut, the elastica.
And then I made my mum take me to Portobello Road.
Kensington Park.
Because I knew that's where Damon lived, and I thought he'd see me, and he'd be like, she's got great clothes.
Better.
Oh, my God, I love her hair. And then I would be like... I thought that was it. I walked up and down that road. My poor mum followed me.
Oh, my God. Your mum's so sweet.
Yes.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I wanted to talk to you about fame, actually, because we have this strange thing between mum and I, which is that I became famous when I was a kid, and then mum became famous in her 50s. And we've sort of met at this point of sharing this very odd experience of being well-known together. And for me, it's been really nice to actually, because I used to find it really difficult and, like, get really stressed out and be like, everyone's looking at me. And it's quite a lot when you're a teenager and you're not expecting...
You don't really want everybody looking at you when you're 15. It's weird.
And you're not expecting it or hunting it or anything, and then it happens. But then mum would be really like, oh, my God, it's, like, not a big deal. I just get over it. Cause
no.
Like, no, you would. Come
love
on.
Love how you paint your mum.
I know, I'm such a bitch, right?
No, really. But she was just like, buck up. Like, because it's what's happening. And
I was like, it's part of your job.
It's part of your job, right?
If you want to do the job.
Yeah.
Yes.
If you don't want to do the job, don't do the job.
And I was like, well, obviously I want to do the job. So, you know, you're in this little thing. But then when mum became famous, I was like, oh, here we go. Your turn. You're going to hate it. And she's all like, ah! Hey! And I'm like, how is she enjoying this so much? And I think it's because of the time of life that it's happened. It's like great gratitude and the true enjoyment of success.
Yeah.
And I'm now there at 39, but I was just wondering what your whole journey with being a famous person, the oddest thing that one can be.
Yeah. Well, I suppose I got started to get well known sort of in my late 20s, mid to late 20s, and that was because of doing television, because of doing the Harry Enfield show, working with French and Saunders. So, you know, I started to become sort of well-known, and I didn't like it. It didn't sit easy with me. And I didn't like sort of going out and... because people come over and say hello and stuff, but then you find that the night's gone with your friends because you've spent most of the time being polite and talking with people and stuff. So basically, I just stopped going out. Right. And so all my sort of socialising would happen either in my house or somebody else's house.
Did you feel pissed off about that, that you suddenly were hermetised? It had begun to hermetise you a bit.
Well, I suppose a bit, because I love people watching, you know? So it's sort of that went out the window. I couldn't sit in a cafe and just stare out the window without somebody back. Perry, you know what I mean? Banging on the fucking window,
God, of course,
you know?
It was Perry time.
And, Perry time was mad.
Yeah.
There was a time when there was, like, a load of kids outside my house.
Just waiting.
Just waiting. I said, I'm not Robbie Williams. Fuck off. You know, I was really like, this is crazy.
Didn't ask for this.
That's it. So, yeah, it didn't sort of sit that well with me. And also, it would make me quite nervous because you think... You worry that people are going to think you're flash or... Do you know what I mean? And I've always been someone that just chats to people. And then suddenly I sort of... I had, like, a shyness.
I was thinking this about you. There's something about you that's quite shy, actually.
Yeah. And I am quite shy. It's really weird for people to hear that, but it really sort of brought that on a lot. But now I'm older. So once I sort of gave up acting officially, I was sort of like, right, that's not my first job. It was sort of great because then I wasn't on the telly so much and then new generation of kids come along
and they
don't know
Perry.
Who the fuck you are.
Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Suddenly you can walk past schools again.
That's it, yeah, exactly.
I remember that. 22,
yeah.
I was like, oh, I can go past schools now.
Yeah, it's so strange. But now, I mean, this is Andy, why I understand you being very sort of, oh, hi, you know, because I remember, well, I did an interview when I was in that period of time. And they said to me, the question then was, what's the best thing about fame? And at the time, I was hating it. So I thought, well, come on, what's good about it? And I said at that time, well, I suppose if it was late at night and I was really worried and scared, I could knock on a door and maybe one out of the 10 houses would know who I was. So they'd let me in. And that weird, it was just about women's safety, you know what I mean?
A sad answer.
Yeah. You know. That's kind of like tender answer.
I've thought that before.
But then blokes get offered out for fights, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so they have a different danger. They have a different kind of danger. Pippa, your work, we haven't even spoken about what you do.
Oh, brilliant. She's a genius.
No, I'm not.
No, you are,
Pippa.
You are. No. So you're a writer and a producer?
Yeah, I co-wrote on a show, but mostly producer.
Aisha, come, tell us what you do. Tell us what you do.
No, well, I just produced Am I Being Unreasonable with Daisy and Celine.
Massively brilliant. So brilliant.
Yeah.
But I produced Kathy's show as well, which is the first, like, thing we worked on.
Yeah, that was... And that was your first time being a producer, wasn't
it? Yes, that was my first producing job.
That short film I was talking about, the little short about beating the cash... Sky wanted more of that, so I turned it into a four-parter called Walking and Talking. And it was just basically about being 13, walking home from school with your mate. And that was it.
Yeah.
And Pippa produced it, and it was her first time producing.
Yeah.
And it was just glorious.
And was that something you had, like, production... Was that what you wanted to do, was be a producer? Or did you just...
I think so. When I left uni or finished my exams, I walked around loads of production companies in Soho asking just for work experience, and I got a job at Talkback or like.
It just looks like what a story.
But it was mad. They literally were looking. There was a show called Your Face or Mine with Jimmy Carr. Yeah, and I had to go on the streets and get people to let me take their photos, which would then. Be in the show and they compare
Do you remember the premise of this show?
What was the premise of
it? It was horrible. It was horrible and I was mortified. It was like your couple would come on and then they'd be like, this is a picture, is this person more or less attractive than your girlfriend?
What?
And you'd like win money. There was some incentive, to be honest. I don't know what it was, but...
It's interesting you say that because I did a lot of reading and watching Oprah kind of life lessons a couple of years ago and I was in hell and she really kind of saved me.
She really helped.
Yeah. I love
and
Oprah.
One thing she said about the TV that she makes is that she, one day, they were doing a problematic story and she said, why are we doing this? Like, what is our intent? And I think for Mum and I, we've completely changed the way we want to make television. Like,
that cruelness. I can't be part of things like that in television.
And also, it's interesting because I started a new job in lockdown and I realised they were really lovely and gave me... I sort of run a comedy or comedy drama slate on my own.
Yes.
Within the company, and they're really lovely about it. But I had was able to make decisions about who I work with and what shows I wanted to try and develop without sort of having pressure. And it was the same thing. It was like, actually, I just want to make shows that I feel really passionate about and stories I want to tell or be part of, and not like make things that I'm not comfortable with.
Is that important for you, Pippa, to feel good about what
you're doing? Yeah, and also make sure that you're giving an opportunity to people that maybe historically haven't had as much of an opportunity.
But also, Pippa's got really good taste. You know, and I think that really helps, you know what I mean, with the work, you know, because her taste is pretty impeccable when it comes to scripts and...
I can tell
but that's why you do what you do and you're not in front of the camera.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah.
We're all different.
I mean, Pippa, it's extraordinary because, you know, you're quite shy. Do you know what I mean? It's great fun and everything. And it was sort of like, when I was invited to do this, I thought, I'd love Pippa to do this, but I don't know whether she would. But no, it was good that you said yes.
I'm really glad that you came. We're really, really glad that you came, honestly. Because for us, it's lovely to have... To watch other people in their relationships, and it tells us something about you, Kath, and then we meet this new person, and this is what happens naturally in our lives anyway. Yeah. We always have dinner parties, and people always bring people with them. That's why we wanted to do this podcast, because it's just an extension of what we do anyway.
Yeah.
We couldn't really... Everybody's like, you should do a podcast, and we kept coming with these ideas. It was like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
Weird. You know what I mean? and then we went, why don't we just do what we always do? Just have people around and have some nice food and Naz drink and a little chat.
There is something that is, I guess, relatively new, but probably not even really anymore, which is seeing you as a broadcaster.
Yeah, what the fuck is that?
Which I love. No, I love, because a lot of people, I wish I could name exactly who I'm talking about, but I won't. A lot of people think that making TV is quite easy.
Or that broadcasting is easy.
Or that broadcasting's easy. And it's really not, but I've watched, I think every documentary you've done for Channel 4, loved all of them and loved everything that you've been talking about. But also watched you blossom into this fantastic broadcaster. Do you see yourself like that at all?
No.
Well, do you think she's a really good broadcaster?
Yeah, I love her.
I just think I'm a bit self-obsessed and it's allowed me to talk about myself like non-fucking-stop for about 5 years. No, it's really weird, though, because this sounds really fucking arrogant, and I don't mean this in an arrogant way, but... I remember years ago when I decided to stop acting, and I'd always directed, you know, I'd always directed plays and stuff, so it wasn't like I was suddenly going into directing plays. It was something I sort of felt I trained in, much like the acting, you know. Look, I know when I get older, I've got my own personality to rely on.
Right.
And that will be how I'll make money when I'm older.
Because of who you are.
And that's what's happening.
Do you know why you can call yourself a broadcaster, Kathy? Because it's about emotional honesty.
Oh, right,
and you are
okay.
A really emotionally honest human being. It's why I really like you. Even before actually probably sat down and had a conversation, I was like, I fucking love that woman. She's excellent. And
likewise.
I really enjoyed doing your podcast. I'm really glad you're here and why we wanted you to come here, because you've got that proper thing going on. Do you know what I mean? And it's a thing that tribally I'm really attracted to, because I need it.
Yeah. Well, that seems to be a great change that's happened in the last 10 years or so, isn't it? It's sort of emotional development, you know what I mean? Understanding that emotional intelligence is important and worthy and also, you know, the mental health thing. You know, the fact that people will talk about it now. Do you know what I mean? And I do think it's important. And I think it's because, like I said earlier, when I grew up, as I got older, I felt guilty that my brothers didn't get any counselling as kids. It had nothing to do with me, but I felt bad on their behalf. Once it was all clicking into place, what they actually fucking went through, and I think that's why I've always sort of spoken out like for men as well, you know. I love my ladies, of course I do. I'm a proper sister, I'm a proper feminist. But it doesn't mean to say that...
That's not to the exclusion of loving men. Loving women, it's about us all having the same chance and the same opportunities, not more or less.
That's
and loving one doesn't mean that you don't love the other.
That's what's fucked up at the moment.
Yes.
Because it's this, you've got to either be one thing or the other. You can't, and it's bollocks. And it's that old divisive thing that's put out by the people with the money and the media and all and the power... So we ignore who's the root of the problem, our governments and all that.
While we're all fucking bickering
about
language.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I don't give a shit who's in the toilet. I really, really don't. Yes. Just have a pee, get out. Who gives a fuck? It's a bathroom.
Who
do you know what I mean?
Just, like, no, I mean, the amount of
why is this
even
a fucking conversation? Yeah. I can't believe there are these endless articles about the fucking toilet.
Yeah, yeah, it's a complete distraction from Brexit.
Exactly.
It's a distraction from
the
poverty that's going on. And the cost of living crisis, and it's always
drives me nuts.
And I said this to Danny Dyer on our podcast the other day about, you know, there's a great clip. I don't know if you've ever seen it, of the old football manager Brian Clough.
I remember him.
And he this is from like the late 80s or whatever. And he says, no, I'll tell you, because I think the conversation was about football hooliganism or something was going on. And he went, no, I'll tell you who the culprits of this country are. It's Rupert Murdoch and Robert Maxwell. No. They're the ones that are behind the divide. You know what I mean? And it's very, very sinister. And we need to see this and we need to understand.
People like that were trying to tell us and nobody was listening. People are still trying to tell us and people are still not listening.
Yeah. There was a weird period where I think that maybe it was just like one GQ cover, but it's like you with like maybe like Liam Gallagher and like a limo and like you're in like a white T-shirt, like a straight leather jacket, 501s. It's a banging outfit. And you're like in a car.
Oh, yeah. No, that was Ray Winston.
Okay, you're with Ray Winston.
That's a Rankin photo.
Rankin, that was it. It's vibey picture. And but it's really, I was like, oh, 1997. Or, yeah. It's like
that period.
So did you ever feel your kind of, that success that you were riding at that time, did it get a bit immersed in all that sort of like Great Britannia, Cool Britannia, Tony Blair?
Sort of. It's sort of, I was invited to be immersed in all that, but I said no.
Declined.
I didn't go to the famous party at Downing Street. I didn't. I was invited to Number 10. I didn't, and Buckingham Palace and all that. And I didn't do any of it. And what's really fucking weird about me, who has had such a sort of hedonistic existence here and there, you know, I've loved sort of, I'm really glad that I used to love getting pissed and love just going out and being fucking nuts. But I decided to stop drinking in the 90s when it was like the party decade where I was getting invited to all the groovy things. And I just was too shy, really. So I would just be like, no, I'm going to stay in, you know, I'm a pothead. So it's like, no, I've got me weed. I don't really need to do all that.
And do you, what do you think now? Are you, like, you're not in any way regretting those decisions?
No. I mean, you look back and think, well, there was, you know, there was quite a few lovely men that were after me at the time. You know, when we did Harry Enfield and Chums, it was sort of like a big thing. That was like the big comedy programme, you know.
It was the big everything programme.
The big everything. And so many people wanted to come to the studio because we did a lot of it in front of a studio audience and all that business. I would just leave the dressing room and go to the car and go home. My best fun times were before getting well known.
Yeah.
It was sort of the 80s.
There's something about show-offy people.
Mm.
Which we three are. You clearly are not Pippa. You're not, but you're a listener and a watcher. Can I just say, though,
Pippa is not a show-offy person. Oh, she's very sort of together and, you know, and she likes being behind the scenes. Her wedding day, this one, turned up on a horse.
Yeah. Can I tell you why? Because I felt, I was so self-conscious about the idea of, like, just everyone looking at you. And I knew my mum was going to walk me whatever bit of it we were going to walk. But I thought, if I have a horse, firstly, everyone has to be fucking laughing at the horse. And it's like, they'll be looking at that and talking about that, and it won't be about me. And also, it would be funny. And I just thought...
And it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant.
In a wedding dress?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Gucci heels. Oh, on side saddle. I've never
I'm
been
I'm going to give that a round of applause.
That's how you get married as an introvert.
So I just wanted to say, though, the thing about a lot of show-offy people, and me included, you two definitely, is that we're also shy. And I know we've said this a couple of times.
Yeah, it's so strange.
But it's a weird, like, dynamic, and it's really hard to explain to people. It's a funny duality.
Yes.
But I think people don't really understand about show-offy people. And I think a lot of people who do the work that us three do are like that. I mean, do you notice it about people that you work with?
Yeah, it's interesting. She won't mind me saying this, but Daisy, for example, at the BAFTAs.
Daisy May Cooper.
Like, had this extraordinary, like, Britney Spears from the Lucky video outfit made.
Oh, my God.
And she turned up, and she looked incredible. She was, like, amazing, going and saying hi, signing autographs. Had this ceremony, and then afterwards she just couldn't stand being in the room with so many people and just left. But that the best bit of it for her was just getting ready, you know, right, and not doing
and
the actual
vision of it and inhabiting this moment. And I think there's something about holding court, which I like, which is very different to a one-on-one intimacy where people are looking you in the eye and there's a different thing expected of you. I've got loads of things to impart, but that doesn't mean I don't feel shy. Like, I'm really bad. We've had this conversation. Like, I'm really bad at going on a date.
Oh, yeah, she's terrible. What kind of dating?
She loves a date. She's really good at a date. She's really good at place.
Just needs activity. Just needs a pool table.
And I'm just like, oh, I'm
because you don't know what to say.
I don't know what to say. I feel like they're not going to like me.
Because of the is it because of the overriding thing of, like, this is about whether we like each other?
Yeah, I think so. And I think
it's
they're not going to like me.
Too vulnerable.
Like sexual attraction.
Yeah,
though.
And I think they're not going to like me. They're not going to fancy me. They're not going to like me. I mean, I should say this one. I have been with my partner for about 20
years. Yeah, yeah. So, out of the game for a minute.
I haven't had to go on a date, but I'm still, the idea of it still sends me into a total panic. Like,
how do you feel about dating and romantic love?
Oh, God, no. No, that's all sort of way in my history now. And which I'm sort of glad about, you know. You sort of look back on things and you think, oh, maybe I should have done this. But you sort of realise everything is your own choice. Do you know what I mean? So I look back and I'm quite proud of the choices that I made. And I do, you know, it's a shame I didn't meet that person, you know, that I absolutely wanted to share my life with. That never really happened. I mean, I did meet people I wanted to, but then they didn't with me, or vice versa. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It never, ever sort of gelled.
Twain.
Yeah, yeah. And I do wonder if it's just because I've always been quite... It's sort of weird. I've always been quite happy on my own. I'm very... I think it does go back from when I was a little kid because I did spend a lot of time on my own and I was happy to sort of do that. Do you know what I mean? And it's like I don't really... Like, I've often said, haven't I, Pippa, that I don't really know what loneliness is. Because I don't really sort of feel lonely. Do you know what I mean?
And don't fear it.
No, I fear other people.
Yeah, the other side.
Like, suddenly, you know, having to, I've got to sort of adjust around to other people now, you know.
I think people are sometimes even scared to say that they like being
alone
in their own company. Yeah. I really like my own company. Mm. I get well into it.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes if Ed's going to his mum's for the weekend, it's the best feeling in the world. You know, you can flat to yourself.
Bar.
You can
shut the door. You'll be all right. You're like, aha.
Yeah, I'll be fine. I lived on my own for, 15 years.
Yeah. Oh, because you weren't with Ed when you met Kathy.
No.
Okay.
So I used to love that feeling on a Friday, just shutting the door.
Do you remember what it was like when Pippa met Ed?
Oh, my God. Well, well, she's known Ed for a long time because Ed is the brother of the best friend she's had since uni.
Joe.
Oh.
Yeah.
So people...
Plot twist. Oh,
wow. Well, this is great, actually. And I did a speech at Pippa and Ed's wedding, which wasn't written down. I just sort of, you know... So it's basically very similar.
Organised, though? You were invited to.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't just get up and I'd like to say a few words.
Piss off, mums. Piss off, you know,
I think
relatives.
I should speak.
Well, no, it was quite extraordinary, actually, because Pippa started to come over and, you know, I'd hear it. She, you know, there was a couple of boyfriends she talked about and I'd say, these people just sound fucking horrible. What are you doing with these ghastly fucking blokes, you know? Please know your worth, you know what I mean? Anyway, and then one night she was over and we were having a bit of dinner. What would we... We'd watch American Pop Idol.
Kathy would... I'd go round and she'd like, come round and watch American Idol with me. And then you'd watch it. And then as soon as the first note came out, no, she'd vibe to it. You never got to see the song. She was like, no, don't like that one.
Don't like it. Shit.
What are we watching? We're just watching the VT bits. And then it was like, and then if there was an old person in the audience went, oh, she's like, just because they're old doesn't mean they're not a cunt. And then you'd be like, okay, I don't know what I'm watching now.
But anyway, so Pippa was round, we were chatting. And then I remember Pippa just saying to me, so, she said, there's this guy, Ed. And I was like, right. And she said, it's Joe's brother. And I went, she went, oh, Kathy, I've loved him since I was 19. I said, I've never heard you talk about this guy. And she said, well, she said, I saw him the other night and he had, and she was like all discombobulated because she'd basically, he'd said to her, oh, we should go out for a drink sometime. And she, being Pippa, just went, you know, that's never going to happen or whatever, you know, made a joke of it and all that business. And I went, OK. I said, just send him a text now.
Oh.
And she went, oh, no, I can't. She went bright red at the thought of it. And I went, no, just say, look, Ed, it was really lovely to see you. Of course, I'd love to have a drink with you. So I'm a bit full on with work, so there's the get out. But, you know, maybe we'll be in touch. You know what I mean? So she was happy with the message. Do you know what I mean? She was happy with the message. Yes.
Everyone was
happy. We were very happy. So, and I even said to her, look, and don't stress. If you don't hear from him for a couple of days, don't stress because you've made it very relaxed in the message.
I'm quite busy myself.
Exactly. Do you know what I mean?
Really exactly. Good. That's actually bloody good text writing, Kathy.
Very good, Kathy. Oh, yeah.
5 minutes later, the message came back and I never forget it. It was one of the best fucking messages. To let a girl know, yes, I do like you, he put anytime, any place, anywhere, Pippa Brown.
And I went,
Pippa!
Ed, go on, Ed.
He likes you, like you
anytime,
like him.
Place,
honestly, that makes me want to shed a tear. Like,
look, so, you're still going red.
I'm going red.
But wasn't it amazing?
You married him.
And dear reader, I married him.
Oh, God. A bit of bloody honesty, right?
That's yeah, and he's a good guy.
Right, you need to, like, make that TV show. That is, like, the best story ever.
That is a good story.
A good story.
Charlie, I can't think of a better story to end lunch with.
Yes, actually. And a little toast. We have a little toast.
A little toast to Ed.
To Ed, I'm sorry.
To
Kathy for the text.
To Kathy.
Excellent
who
texting.
Who knew? Excellent texter.
It's so lovely to meet
Thanks
you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for
meal.
Coming.
This was a complete delight.
This has been amazing. Yeah.
Oh,
absolutely delicious.
Can I take some of that home?
I've got actual Tupperware. Well, you know, I didn't know I could be more in love with Kathy Burke than I already am. And I loved Pippa.
Oh, yeah, Pippa was great.
Their relationship's really lovely, isn't it? Because you can see kind of what they give each other. Like, Kathy, like, when we started to try to get Pippa to talk about herself, she went really shy
right.
and sort of almost didn't want to. And so Kathy was like, I'm going to do it for her because this is what you need to know about her.
Yeah.
And then I realised that Pippa gives Kathy a sort of different kind of safety. She sees Kathy, like, right, she sees that little 12-year-old knocking on people's doors asking for dinner.
Oh, my God!
Oh, my goodness.
That's too funny. I was like, I see it, I believe it, I know who you are now.
Yeah, and I loved meeting Pippa. I'm slightly obsessed with Ed.
The Ed story. I'm
anytime,
so happy I asked.
Anytime, any place, anywhere, Pippa Brown. Oh my God.
I was like,
it's like a Hugh Grant movie. Oh, and she'd love to see you. And
I was like, good twist. Seriously, good they told twist. Us that story like a broadcaster and a TV producer.
Plot
we
plot
were like
twist.
Gripped. I was plot like, twist. Then what happened?
Yeah.
And that was beautiful. And also to be here with the doors open, to show everyone around the garden and the flowers.
And they met the neighbours on the way
and
out.
And Kathy met the neighbours. It's more than just inviting someone around to lunch. It's like,
it's our home.
Come in.
Yeah. Our world, our home.
Come in.
Nice.
Cheers to that.
Come on in.
Come on in.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.